On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, the Nets have clinched a playoff berth with a win over the Sacramento Kings. Josh and I celebrate, break down the game, all that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your fearless host, Josh Bass. Joining me as always, Marcus Barahal, and we are here to provide you daily coverage of your favorite team, the Brooklyn Nets. And we are in a good mood today because they clinched officially a playoff spot and will not be in the play-in games either. So officially, we'll be guaranteed four games against either the Milwaukee Bucks, or I guess the two seed are the Raptors. But if you're in a good mood, subscribe to the podcast, rate us, and review us. And we would love to hear your feedback. Marcus, how are you doing? We just watched a pretty nice Nets win against the Kings. I'm in a good mood.
Yeah, Josh, I'm riding the high. This is kind of crazy because, I don't know, I mean, the expectations were very low coming into the bubble. I mean, I thought this team would go 2-6. I said 3-5 was like an outside chance, which I guess they could still finish that way. But they're already 3-2, off to a fast start. They've clinched the playoff spot, avoiding the play-in, like you said. And they are currently a game up on the Magic for the 7 seed. We're recording this at halftime of the Magic-Sixers game, where it's a close game there. It's a two-point game. So could go either way, but if Orlando loses that, the Nets' magic number to clinch the 7 seed is down to 2. So this is kind of crazy. They might avoid the Bucks.
Yeah, I know. I never would have thunk it. I think I was, I mean, you were optimistic at 2-6 from my vantage point. I was saying like 1-7, lock it in. and now they're just making me like seem like an idiot. But I think, I don't know, because obviously like, the Nets are not going to beat either the Raptors or the Bucks. They will have it will be more competitive against the Raptors, but I'm trying to balance that against being able to watch Giannis for four games and also Brooke Lopez, and just like I love watching both
those
teams.
What about Rondé on the Raptors?
Another I didn't like watching him when he was on the Nets.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, well, now you can root against him.
That's true. I just don't want the... I feel like the Raptors and Nets had, like, a mini rivalry, and now I guess it's kind of gone, but I don't want them to, like, try to rekindle it and then just destroy us, and then, you know, it's kind of rubbing salt in the wounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was hoping maybe they'd play Philly, like, earlier on in the season, just to kind of keep that going from last year, but Philly did not hold up their end of things.
Yeah, yeah. I think the main rivalry now would be, you know, Philly and... Miami and Indiana, based on the Jimmy Butler, TJ Warren rivalry from when they played earlier this season. But, you know, that's the current matchup right now. So I'm extremely excited. The Pacers need to fend off Philly for the 5 seed. And then with the Ben Simmons news, I guess that's more likely. But TJ Warren, especially with his, you know, leap into stardom as soon as he got in the bubble and his, you know, new superpowers of being like the best scorer of all time. That's actually like a really compelling matchup, even more so than it was before.
Yeah, I mean, and Boston-Philly as the 3-6 would be really fun. Also, Al Horford's revenge series. Mm-hmm. Those two teams have obviously gone at it a ton in the past. And then, I don't know, even Milwaukee-Orlando. Orlando at least has like a ton of guys with size. Like, no one's going to stop Giannis, and they're not probably even going to win a game. Maybe it goes 5, but yeah, I mean, I kind of like those matchups, so I'd be okay with the Nets holding on to the 7 seed. That game against Orlando, though, on Tuesday is going to be really important.
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, I'm especially given the way the Nets played at Orlando, the fact that they've gone 3-1 since then is pretty surprising. Yeah. I will be interested. I don't know if it was like just a bad matchup with Orlando. They just came out slow and then were energized by playing such a terrible Washington team that's propelled in the last couple games. I'm curious to see how they match up again. I mean, the last game was a blowout, but Jonathan Isaac was able to be a really strong force against the Nets, and obviously, you know, he had that devastating injury, so he's out now. So maybe it will be a bit more even, but I think Jacques has actually done, you know, if we want to segue more into the Nets,
mm-hmm.
has done a really nice job with the rotation, and much so that I'm curious to see how he would be able to rejigger things now that they have a rematch against Orlando.
Yeah, I praised him a lot on the last podcast after the Bucks win, just because of the whole scheme. The team went to a ton of zone that worked really well defensively against Giannis, and then there was a ton of ball movement, which there was again in this game. 30 assists for the Nets against just 9 turnovers. So I think he really has the team firing on all cylinders. And like you said about the rotation, he kept it really tight in this game. It was really 8 guys. Dante Hall got some run early on his birthday, but picked up 3 fouls in 3 mm-hmm. minutes, and then we didn't really see him again until garbage time. So it was really just the 5 starters plus Chioza, Tyler Johnson, and TLC. And yeah, I mean, guys played a ton of minutes, which is something that we didn't see under Kenny Atkinson, like even in like situations where you would have thought, okay, this is a game they should try to win, like maybe play these guys a little more. That's not the case with Jacques Vaughn. He's really putting the pedal to the metal. He's trusting his guys. I think they're all in good shape conditioning wise. So it's worked out really well, and I've been impressed with him.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, think about it, like LeVert was injured a lot of the season, so he didn't play that much. Mm-hmm. I guess the only guys that really played significant minutes throughout the whole season would be Jared Allen, Joe Harris, and Temple, because TLC came in late. Kurtz is in the doghouse the whole year. Right. Chioza was in the, I guess he probably played a lot in the G League, but I don't know. Yeah, it's like this is not the pro. Like, they have a lot of room to play a lot of minutes because this is like their, you know, 4th through 15th men.
It's a good point. And like even Jared Allen, like it used to be like surprising to see him play like 32 minutes yeah. in a game. He played 36 in this one, and they kind of had to like drag him out at the end because he was close to a triple double with 17, 11, and 8. He kind of wanted to stay out there. But yeah, seeing him play 36 minutes, he played a ton in the Bucks game as well. I think he played like 38 or 39 minutes in that one. So it's definitely like a change in philosophy, and it's leading to wins right now. So tough to complain.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I love that he moved Temple into the starting lineup. You know, if the Nets are going to go with the shorter rotation, it probably makes sense to move Temple into that starting lineup because he's had his offensive struggles and is certainly more of a low-usage guy in the optimal scenario. So, you know, he's better with the low as a low-usage player mixed in with the starters and kind of the Nets' top offensive weapons. So then you're able to pair 2 ball handlers in the second unit with Chioza and Tyler Johnson. You know, these guys aren't great, but they're enough pieces that can make for something resembling an NBA offense if you match them the right way.
Yeah, and Temple, really great in the Bucks game after struggling for a long time. And then in this game, kind of quiet if you just look at the stats. He did 12 points on 4 of 7, 2 of 4 from 3. But he really was important in that third quarter where the Nets had built up a 16-point lead. Sacramento cut it all the way down to 4, and then Temple hit a big shot. He was playing active defensively. He had a couple steals mm-hmm. and really like helped the Nets push it back up to like 10 or 11. Then they eventually took over early on in the fourth. But like, yeah, without him out there, they were looking a little bit shaky for a moment there.
Yeah, for sure.
RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and super easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, those prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
I think he did a nice job. Like, he picked the spots and was able to do some damage and was one of the more consistent Nets tonight. I mean, I think Allen had a great game.
He was awesome.
Harris was on fire at the start, and that was, you know, propelling the Nets when they were off to a little slower of a start as a team, and he was doing a really nice job keeping them in it. And then second and third quarter, you know, the offense really did pick up. And then I thought Kurtz had some nice plays also, and LeVert, you know, finishes with 22, 5, and 7 and 3 steals, but as I always hearken on with the guy, it's about the efficiency, and he did take 21 shots. He had a really nice stretch in the second quarter where he was, you know, getting to the basket, had some nice step back threes, seemed really dialed in. I just need that consistency for the whole game. I mean, maybe you can tell me that I'm a huge hater, because I probably am, but I don't know.
No, I think it's like more so his like aesthetics, I think. I don't know. Like his line, like you said, 22-7-5, three steals. He played with active hands defensively. He did a great job, especially early, orchestrating and kind of acting as the point guard. Only two turnovers against those seven assists. Like he's kind of being asked to do things that he isn't normally asked to do. He's on the ball a lot more. He's being asked to facilitate a lot more. And like, yeah, he's not like shooting super efficiently, and he's I mean, the stuff at the free throw line is a different story. That I think he's struggled at. He was 1-for-4 in this game. But like overall, I think he's being asked to do more than he's ever been asked to do. And so I think for the efficiency to go down, I think makes a little bit of sense compared to what he was being tasked with towards the end of the season with Dinwiddie drawing a lot of defensive attention. Like he's seeing double teams now, which he's never had to face.
Mm-hmm.
He's like running point guard. I don't know. It's just a completely different role for him. So
yeah,
I'm kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt. Yeah. He hadn't played in a quarantine bubble before. So all new things.
Yeah. No, and maybe I'm like, with the usage increase that he has, obviously his efficiency isn't going to go up. So I don't really know what I'm expecting. I guess since it hasn't gone down a ton, it was already pretty low to begin with, then probably we are in a good spot with him. I don't know. He's not wowing me, but he's also not like been a disgrace to James Naismith and the sport itself. So, yeah, I mean, you know, he's in that in-between stage.
I get what you're saying, though, because, like, he was supposed to be, like, the number one guy coming into this bubble. People were thinking he would maybe average 30. Like, I don't think you or I thought that, but I definitely saw that on Twitter. And, like, he was probably their third best player in this game. Like, Harris, another just incredible shooting performance. After he was 6-of-7 from three against the Bucks, he was 5-of-7 in this game. He was cutting to the basket well, chipped in with some assists and some rebounds. And Jared Allen was just the best big man in this game. The Kings didn't really have an answer for him. 17, 11, and 8, like we said before. Like, those two guys were the two best players, and so maybe it's that LeVert isn't, like, standing out from the pack as much as maybe we thought he would. Maybe that's what is kind of missing from his game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, he's not the clear best player on the team. Like, as you mentioned, Allen and Harris have been, they've kind of rounded out that trio of competence, as you know, as I coined the term about 2 seconds ago.
That was good.
He's not the standout guy. You could easily say that. You could probably make a case for any three of them have been the Nets' best player so far.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I guess he's done an adequate job, and he's the best player on the team, or one of the three best players. That's, you know, 3-2. So that's something. Also, like, yeah. Can we just talk about how unimpressive the Kings are?
I was surprised by them, just because they put up so many points in that Pelicans game, and the Pelicans aren't like a defensive team by any stretch, but like I think they put up 149 or something against the Pelicans, 49 in one quarter, and they didn't score 30 in a single quarter against the Nets. Bogdanovich was really good for them, but that was kind of it. Fox was just okay. And you can kind of like play off him and make him shoot from the outside, and he's not going to make it. They had moments where like Barnes was bullying guys, and even Corey Joseph was like playing out of the post, but they just, I don't know. They didn't look particularly impressive on either end.
Yeah, it's a lot of guys just trying to get theirs.
Also, Corey Brewer is on this team. I completely missed when they re-signed him, but
yeah, I think that it was like in the midst of all the pandemic and wasn't a forefront, the Corey Brewer signing.
No, completely missed that.
Yeah. And also, Nemanja Bjelica looks exactly like Luke Babbitt with his long, when Luke Babbitt had long hair.
He has an interesting game.
It's kind of fun. He has big like a Dylan Brooks energy, or someone that just like is clearly not one of the best players on the team, but will just fire it up from anywhere. Which I always
enjoy. They played him like at the center for decent stretches, and they had Len in there, they had Holmes in there. Like, none of their big guys really played a ton of minutes. Maybe it was just they were trying to find someone to contain Allen, and no one's really doing the job. But I don't know. I mean, your guy Alex Len, Josh, he grabbed a lot of rebounds, but he couldn't really finish inside. So they were missing like someone inside. I guess Bagley could have been that guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you put him in, and Rashawn Holmes has had a very good season for them. But if you put him in the Rashawn Holmes role, obviously you lose a ton on defense. But offensively, you have a much more just dynamic player, and also someone who's very skilled. But I don't know. That said, Holmes had a good year. Excellent finisher around the basket. Not the most disciplined defensively, but he is a good shot blocker. So there's trade-offs.
Yeah, for sure. They don't have like a complete big guy to pair with. I mean, Fox and Bogdanovich were good in this game. Barnes was solid. Buddy Hield scored some points in garbage time. Like, they had some offense in the backcourt and on the wing, but just nothing really from their bigs.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that, and I think that's kind of like everyone talks about how you don't need big men in this league, but I think having some sort of consistent big man presence, especially since your perimeter players are relatively inexperienced, would be helpful. You know,
you need people who don't take anything off the table. Like you just said, Holmes isn't really contributing a ton offensively, especially in terms of spacing when you have Fox out there already, and Bielitsa just can't really defend all that well. He had 4 fouls in 18 minutes, and they kind of played off Jared Allen a lot from the high post, which was what allowed him to pick out cutters and like have a lot of nice give and goes with Joe Harris. So a guy like Jared Allen, this was a matchup where he should have played well, and he did, which is a really good sign for him going forward.
Yep. Marcus, has the 3-2 stretch done anything for you in terms of Jacques Vaughn's candidacy for the full-time head coaching position?
Honestly, kind of, yeah. I've been really impressed with him, and I would be totally okay if they brought him back as the head coach. And as I said on the last podcast, like, even if they didn't, I think he's kind of shown that he can be a head coach in this league. I thought that the game plan, especially against the Bucks, was like really, really smart. Just like who they decided to play off of, the way that everyone was sort of communicating and intact, and guys were, Temple especially, was doing a great job of communicating defensively on the court. And I think all that credit goes to him. And then also the stuff that we've seen off the court, there was the story about his bamboo plant, which he has brought with him everywhere in the bubble as a symbol of like, you have to be flexible, but not break, interesting on that end, but it seems to have resonated with the team, and maybe it's just because they have like a lot of like low ego younger guys on the team right now in the bubble, and like he doesn't have either of his superstars, he doesn't have Dinwiddie, who can be a little mercurial at times. There's a lot of guys who aren't there who will be on the team next year, so maybe it's a different roster, but I think regardless, he's proven that he at least like can coach and is like a solid coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think he's the right fit for a young, developing team, even though he is kind of a newer coach. It's only his second stint, so you would think he might be. I think he probably is someone that, like maybe like a Ty Lue, is good with vets. But he has done a nice job with his Nets team, which in its current form does kind of fit the bill of the former that I described, where it's, you know, very inexperienced, very little talent, but he's done a nice job with it. And who knows, maybe after the next 3 games we'll completely change our mind, but I think you have to say that he has outperformed what expectations were.
Yeah, and I think he's shown real adaptability too. Like, Lance Thomas didn't play in this game until garbage time. We complained about that at the onset of the seeding games. Chioza has started and come off the bench. Tyler Johnson has started and come off the bench. Temple, Rhodey, like, he's been very flexible with the lineups he runs out there, who's starting, who's getting more minutes than who. So I think that that's like a really big key for a head coach that we've seen from guys like Nick Nurse, Mike Budenholzer, who've had a lot of success lately, is that kind of flexibility and malleability.
Yeah, yeah. That's the only thing that Lionel Hollins was missing, or else he would have been an incredible coach.
Lionel.
Oh, my God, I hate him so much. And Mark, is anything from the Nets Celtics a couple days ago? I think we didn't record after it because we were just both disgusted by the Nets defense and
allowing 149
points.
Yeah. I thought that they were kind of hanging in it up until like late in the first quarter, and I was kind of impressed with how they were playing early on. They got Tatum in foul trouble in the first half. I think they held him to like 6 minutes or something, like really small, just because he had picked up two quick ones in the first, and then right when he came back in the second, he picked up a third. But yeah, the defense collapsed after the first like 10 or so minutes, and they were just giving up a ton of shots. It was interesting because it was similar to the shots they were giving up against the Bucks in that game, but the personnel they were giving the shots up to was a lot better than who they were giving the shots up to against Milwaukee. In that Bucks game, it was a lot of like DJ Wilson would be the guy shooting, or Eric Bledsoe after having missed a couple of shots. But in this game, Jaylen Brown took a lot of shots from deep that he hit. And then in the second half, Tatum really went off and was just kind of getting any shot he wanted on the Nets defense. And so I think they came into it riding that Bucks win and were just kind of like, all right, we already got one. Like, let's just kind of roll out a similar game plan. But yeah, that was, I think they needed to adapt a little bit more to the personnel they faced. That was kind of the main takeaway. And then Jeremiah Martin, nice run in garbage time. He put up 20 points. And I've been impressed with him defensively. So good to see his shot go down at the end of that game.
Yeah, he's definitely been a problem defensively. Yeah, I think like the defense was just soft. I felt like they, like times where they were kind of in like a matchup-y type zone, and Boston would make just bring the ball up, one simple pass to the winger corner and get a wide open three. Like, it shouldn't be that easy. That's like, it should at least be a few kind of accurate passes before they're getting something like that, not just off one pass. And Boston, to their credit, you know, went 20 of 39 from three. So they shot the lights out of the ball. And when you're the Nets, if you have that talent gap, if they're going to shoot that well from three, you just don't have the manpower to keep up with it. And so Boston had a good shooting night, which happens, but also the Nets didn't do themselves any favors. And
yeah, there were, you know,
turnovers,
there were a lot of
just sloppy game.
Yeah, I was just going to say the turnovers, like in the Milwaukee game, they didn't have their first turnover until I think midway through the second quarter of that game. And in this one, they turned it over 17 times and they committed a ton of fouls. They sent the Celtics to the line 35 times. They were fouling on 3-point attempts, just like not really disciplined. Maybe that's partially due to it being a back-to-back, maybe partially due to the late start time. But I think a lot of it was just sloppiness, bad defense, and the Celtics just really executing in a game coming off. I think they'd kind of struggled at times prior to this game. So they were kind of looking to get a win. So it's just a tough game.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, like, if you're the Celtics and you let the Nets, like, you know, beat the Bucks and then beat you guys, I mean, there's kind of on a run where you know they're going to be unstoppable when it gets to playoff time. So they really had to kind of squash it.
You can't let a team like the Nets get momentum.
Yeah, exactly. You can't let a Caris LeVert team get ahead of steam.
Chioza is a problem if you give him a couple shots.
If you give Chioza an inch, he takes a mile.
He's so fast.
I know. Well, he is. I'd love to see him and De'Aaron Fox in a race.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting. They were talking about that pregame that Fox might be, like, the fastest guy in the league. But Chioza is definitely, he's up there if he's not the fastest.
Yeah, no, I agreed. He also just, like, he's obviously fast, but also some guys don't necessarily know how to harness that and also keep, like, have their dribble keep up with it.
Yeah.
But Chioza certainly does. So it's a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, he keeps his dribble alive really well. And I think partially just because he's so small, it like almost looks like he's moving faster because he like has to take more steps than the other guys to like have the same like speed because his stride is so small.
I know. It's like him versus Bol Bol or Mohamed Bamba or Taco Fall or one of these guys. Stark difference.
That would be cool at All-Star Weekend if they just had like two shortest guys and two tallest guys and like run two on two
challenge?
Or something. I don't know. Yeah, maybe a skills challenge. But like I'd love to
see. Well, that's what they do now. They have like the big men.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I think I want to see like a 2-on-2 game where I guess it would kind of devolve into like if the big guys got the ball, I could just back them down. But
I'd love superstar big guys and superstar guards. So it's like Dame and James Harden against AD and Embiid.
Right. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
AD and Embiid would just, like, mash them?
They would never do it. But yeah, I feel like they could maybe do that at, like, a G League level. Or, like, guys who don't really care if they lose that kind of game. But
mm-hmm. Chosen yeah. Dante Hall against, I don't even know who's still in the G League after Christian Wood got called up. Like, Troy Daniels and someone else.
Yeah, I would watch. I would watch.
For sure. I'd watch a lot of stuff. I guess we should have labeled this segment Mussolinius because we have really gotten off the rails.
Oh, Josh,
here.
You missed it. I did a solo Mussolinius on the last podcast.
Oh, really?
He was so good. He was so good in the Bucks game. It was like the best game he's ever played.
Oh, my God. How many did he have? Like, I thought he had like 12 points. I looked at the stats.
Yeah, it was more so that he was like making smart decisions in transition. He made good passes. Like he just like was playing really under control. So I had to shout him out. Nice. Could be the last Mussolini segment of all time, but
I feel like we still have to keep doing it even if he's not on the team.
Yeah, we'll squeeze him in regardless.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Only a -12 in the game for Jean.
Pretty good.
Yeah. It's good compared to the rest of the team. He's been good in COVID.
Yeah. Josh, the next game the Nets have is against the Clippers Sunday night. The Magic play the Celtics earlier that day. Just looking at like the Magic's schedule, they have Celtics, then they have the head-to-head with the Nets, then they have the Pelicans, whereas Brooklyn has Clippers, then the head-to-head, then the Blazers. So kind of even schedule-wise, unless the Pelicans are eliminated by then who knows what they'll run out in that game. But I feel like the Nets have a decent shot at the 7 seed. They came into it with that half game lead. Even if Orlando wins this game against Philly that they're playing today, they're up by 6 halfway through the third quarter right now. If the Nets win that game head to head against the Magic, they'll probably get the 7 seed.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's really going to come down to that. I mean, if they win that one, I don't even know if they really have to win any of the other two. They might still be able to get it. But yeah, and if they lose to the Magic, they'll probably have to win their other two games.
Yeah.
Considering if the Magic are able to hold on against the Sixers tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I'm stunned, but I will be watching that Magic Celtics game on Sunday very closely.
I know. Alec Burks is giving the Sixers a nice boost off the bench, 13 today. So Alec Burks might be the one to hopefully knock off the Magic and give the Nets pole position of the 7 seed.
Tobias Harris needs to step it up. Just looking at this box score. Oh my goodness.
I know. Terrence Ross is doing a sabotage on the Magic. Oh, 7. Thanks, Terrence.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. So we are devolving here, and with that, I will tell all of you that to go again, rate us, review us, and more importantly, check out our colleagues on the Locked On Podcast Network doing a lot of great stuff across the network. And baseball season, my Yankees doing very well. Check out Locked On Yankees. Until next time, be well.
Bye.